Good morning, everyone. I'm John Myrie.
And I'm Art Malin.
And welcome to the Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. On this week's show, we're talking with Brooke Torstenson down at Hayward Bait and Bottle. And then again, we're talking with our local DNR fisheries manager, Max Walter. And lastly, some great winter panfish and walleye tips from Minnesota pro angler and outdoor writer Ron Anwan. Lots to cover on this week's show, all coming up right after these messages.
The Can-Am Holiday Blitz is on at Hayward Power Sports, and it's a perfect time to take advantage of incredible savings on remaining 2017 models. Take home a 2017 Can-Am Defender HD5 side-by-side with dynamic power steering for under 10 grand. Yes, just $99.99. You can get rebates up to $1,500 or choose a 2-year warranty and a $1,000 rebate on all remaining 2017 Defender side-by-sides. The new 2018s are here with the rugged Outlander ATVs as well as the Maverick X3 and Defender side-by-sides. And yes, even the new 2018s offer great deals with up to a 2-year warranty or up to a $500 rebate on select models. Can-Am off-road vehicles are built to satisfy. This is Johnny inviting you to take advantage of the holiday blitz today at Hayward Power Sports, just 10 minutes east of Hayward on Highway 77, or visit us online at haywardpowersports.com.
ATVs can be hazardous to operate. Can-Am ATV riders must be at least 16 years of age and have taken a training course. Avoid operating side-by-sides on paved or public roads. Always wear a helmet and see dealer for details.
Riding along in my automobile.
Bumping into things unexpectedly? Make your first choice for collision repair. Ernie's Auto Body, featuring the most advanced collision repair facility in Northwest Wisconsin. With a state-of-the-art spray bake-down draft paint booth for that better-than-new finish, laser technology for precision frame alignment, loaner cars available, computerized estimates, written guarantees, and documented unmatched customer service, the clear choice is Ernie's Auto Body, south of Hayward on Highway 63 and Nursery Road, where quality is no accident.
Lynn's Custom Meats and Catering welcomes you to stop by for their great selection of mouth-watering steaks, as well as many varieties of brat sausages and much more. Along with that, Lynn's also has a variety of snack sticks, summer sausage, cheese curds, and homemade jerky, as well as great double-smoked bacon. Lynn's is open Mondays to Fridays from 9 to 5:30, Saturdays 9 to 4, and closed Sundays. Lynn's Custom Meats and Catering, next to Cooper's Family Restaurant in Hayward. We're recording this week's show down at Hayward Bait and Bottle, and Art says it's opening weekend of deer season as this is airing here.
That's true, and the weather's going to be a little unusual this year, I think. Right now, a week ago, it was cold. We had a real cold several days, down to zero. Next week, that's a possibility of happening again.
Wow. And we'll talk a little bit as a rut thing when we get talking. We got Brooke Torstenson down here at Hayward Bait and Bottle, and Brooke, first of all, we finally got some ice out there. A week ago, guys were starting to sneak out on ice. Not me, but some guys would.
Yeah, rumor has it people have been out on the ice. And, they're brave souls. But, if you can get out there, go ahead and go for it. But be very, very safe and check that ice.
That first ice draw, for some reason, is just guys got to get out there. And I know you guys are set up. You got all the shacks. You're starting to set shacks up and everything else in here now.
Yeah, I think that doesn't help the bug for some of those guys that come walking in here and they see all the toys that we bought for this year. And they're looking at it going, oh, I got to get out there. And then we have people coming in. They're getting parts for their shacks. They're getting redoing their tip-ups. Everybody's getting ready. It's that time of year.
I got a few little puddle lakes, Art, that I want to try this year, ice fishing. In some of these small lakes, I'm finding out I've got some awful nice panfish in them. But you got to be careful on what you harvest out of there.
Yeah. Every year, it seems, there's a few people who break through that don't know what's going on. We had an accident a couple of years ago. We lost one of our good friends and guides. And you just have to be darn careful. It's ridiculous just to go out and kill yourself. Wait a little bit. What's a couple more days going to be?
Yeah, we're going to have some good ice. And, talking about the fact that we're into the deer season as we're airing this, I saw some strange stuff as far as the rut going on here up till a week or so before the season. The bucks were staying away from the does. They were with the does, but they'd stay out 50, 100 yards out. That tells me they really weren't even into that breeding part of the rut yet.
No, and I was seeing the same thing. Some of the younger bucks were chasing, but the older ones, I was seeing the same thing. They would sit on a hillside. They'd come around the outside of a food plot. It's almost like they're scent checking. They're just going around the edges, and they're looking. And then we had such a high acorn population that the deer are very spread out if you have a lot of oaks in your area.
And when they're doing that, when they get to a certain period of time, And I see that usually I get to thinking about it about the week before the gun deer season. They start losing all that that fear. It seems like they just come right in. They're right in front of the does and right on top of them chasing them.
Yeah, you'll be sitting there and you'll be watching a doe, and all of a sudden her head will pick up. She'll look the opposite direction, and boom, she's gone. And then right behind her, here comes a buck, come running out of the brush, and then, you know, maybe 20 minutes later, they might come right back into the same food plot.
You know, we still, I think we'll probably have that going on this weekend here as the first part of the season.
Yeah, I believe the opening weekend, there will definitely be a lot of bucks killed that are chasing does.
Yeah. You know, and then after that, you've got, you know, more rut time coming up, a second rut, I guess.
That's true. I'm involved in the snapshot program that the DNR has going, and I noticed last year, just like you were talking about, there would be a doe, we'd see a picture of a doe at night, then there's a small buck, then there's a larger buck, and then there's a big buck. They're all chasing in their minds the same thing, but it's the big bucks that eventually make haste and get other people away from them, and they do their job.
You know, the one thing I've noticed with the trail cameras, Brooke, watching over the years, is that it seems like you're seeing these bucks at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, and then it gets earlier and earlier and earlier. They work your way right back toward right at dusk or even into daylight, and that's when they start getting in. They really get into that rut heavy.
Yep, and that's when they're going to really come out into those openings, because most of us don't put our cameras right back in the middle of where the deer live.
No.
We don't go into their bedrooms.
No, we don't. But those bucks are smart. They tend to be more of a nocturnal. And, you know, contrary to people thinking that, you know, you just throw some corn out there and you got a buck's going to come running in, that's not the case.
No, as the years go by and as age goes by, they get smarter and smarter. And same thing with older does. The older does will be doing the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
They'll get more nocturnal. But then once the temperature starts changing, that's what's going to be, like Art was saying, with it being warmer, the deer might be a little more nocturnal because they're not going to have to feed as much.
You know, it depends upon what you want to hunt for. Do you want to kill a buck, or do you want to kill a doe and get some meat? I guess that's generally what happens. But the big thing that's going to happen this year is you have to register in the area that you shot that animal.
In the zone that you shoot it.
Exactly, right? Exactly. And you can't go to another zone legally and register your deer.
You know, in our zone here, how far is it running? All just Sawyer County, right, Brooke?
Sawyer County's right here. Then you have Washburn, which butts up to us. And there's still tags left in Washburn County as of right now. And Sawyer County, I believe, is completely sold out because we have not had doe tags, I think, in 2 years.
Brooke, you know, the muzzleloader season will come up after that. I know you like to hunt. That's your favorite time, like me. There's not as many people out there. It's just a good time, and the bucks are more active.
Yeah, they're more active. Now they're done rutting. Now they want to feed. You're going to see them traveling more. They have to rebuild themselves up for their winter. They're depleted in their body fat, and their energy level is low. But once the sun starts coming out, I see more daylight activity because they don't want to burn too much energy by feeding when it's super cold in the middle of the night.
Well, Brooke, I want to thank you for coming in here. And I want to remind people again, anything you need for the hunting season or for the ice fishing season, you guys got it all down here.
Yeah, we've got plenty of ammunition. We can do boar sighting if you need a last-minute boar sighting. Or if you have an issue with your gun during gun season, come in and see us.
And Art, you know, we're going to have to take a break right now and hear from some of our fine sponsors. We come back, I've got another interview with our favorite guy out there, our local fisheries manager for the DNR, Max Welter. And this time he's talking about a whole different topic, talking about ice panfish. So we're going to take that break right now. We'll be back right after that.
Hunters and anglers, Hayward Bait and Bottle is your one-stop sport and bottle shop in the Hayward area. Stop in and check out the huge selection of fall muskie, bass, walleye, and panfish tackle. They also carry archery supplies, bows, crossbows, muzzle loaders, ammo, scents, tree stands, and much more. Gear up for the fall at Hayward Bait and Bottle. And while you're there, check out the bottle shop for a full selection of beer, wine, and liquor, too. Hayward Bait and Bottle is your one-stop sport and bottle shop.
The Hayward Lakes Visitors and Convention Bureau in Sawyer County, Wisconsin, welcomes you to our Northwoods hometown. No matter the season, no matter the activity, you'll always be surrounded by our great outdoors. What more could you ask for in a vacation destination? Woods, waters, world-class events. Contact us for information on lodging, dining, attractions, events, trail conditions, and more. Order your free vacation guide and start planning your getaway today. Visit us at haywardlakes.com or call 1-800-724-2992.
Let Hayward Power Sports help you get yourself or give the ultimate gift this season, a new Polaris snowmobile. Buy now and make no payments until April. Plus, get rebates up to $1,200 on remaining Polaris sleds. Choose from the 2017 Polaris Indy, Rush, Switchback, XCR, Voyager, or SKS. Or check out the new 2018s at Hayward Power Sports, just 10 minutes east of Hayward on Highway 77.
Offer subject to credit approval and valid on select new Polaris snowmobiles. See dealer for details. Polaris recommends that all riders take a training course, wear a helmet and safety apparel, never drink and ride.
If you'd like to have your time fishing be more enjoyable and productive, hiring a fishing guide can be a good investment. Whether it's learning more about fish patterns throughout the year, learning how to use your depth finder to find the best spots and fish, learn how to use that GPS to get the most out of it, or learn better boat control. A day on the water with a guide can really help you to be a better angler, as well as make a day on the lake very enjoyable. To book a guide trip this year or get more information, call myself, John Myrie, at 715-462-9402. Or Art Malin at 715-865-2336. Or you can find us on the internet at www.wiscnorthlandoutdoors.com. And then just click on Area Guides.
Welcome back to another segment of this week's Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. Myself, John Myrie, and co-host Art Malin. And Art, you know, I get Max on here a lot because he wants to get the message out on stuff. And you know, I've had time talking about a whole bunch of different things in the last few months here. But one thing I was going to talk about this week is ice panfish, panfishing for, you know, for panfish under the ice.
Yeah, you know, if you take the time and listen to what he's saying, you're going to learn something. If you learn something, you're going to be able to use it when you're ice fishing.
Well, you know, and that and the fact that we talked about before, there is not an infinite supply of panfish out there. And the smaller the lake, the more careful a person should start to think about how many fish you're going to take out of it, because, you know, size structure starts to suffer greatly as you start harvesting a lot of fish.
You take the big fish out constantly in a small lake, they're going to be small fish then in the future.
Let's hear what Max has to say about that, and we come back, I'll have another interview and more on your outdoors. Well, Max, you know, it won't be long. We'll be looking at hard water fishing out here, and a lot of guys focus on panfish, bluegills and crappies. And, you know, I've been maintaining, we've talked about this before too, but how the harvest level itself on a lake, whether it's bluegills or crappies, can determine the size structure pretty much in that lake coming down the line as far as the next year is it coming.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think harvest is probably the biggest factor on most of our lakes. There's, you know, some lakes that have stunted bluegill and they're so abundant that no amount of harvest really matters. Think about some of the bluegill populations like Spider Lake and Mud Callahan Lake. But if you're talking about most of our lakes and most of our panfish populations, harvest is the big thing that determines the size out there.
Well, you know, with crappies, I'll start with crappies. Crappies, it seems to be that the harder you harvest them, the size structure overall goes down in the lake, it seems like.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. The reason that, you know, you don't see a lot of 14, 15, 16-inch crappies in most of our public waters is harvest. If you spend the time to go up into some little lake in the national forest, or if you have a private pond that you have access to that doesn't get fish very much, that's where you'll actually find those fish. And it's not that there's a fundamental difference between crappies in public and crappies in private waters. They grow the same, they have the same genetics and everything. It's just a matter of how many years they're allowed to be out there and how much time they're given to grow.
They're vulnerable fish, actually. The chances of them staying in the lake long enough, which is usually 12, 14 years to get to be that big, doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah. And so here's something that I think you'll find interesting. When you look at studies of crappies, on average, about 30% of them die every year of natural causes anyhow. So that's has nothing to do with fishing. Just natural cause could be a variety of things, diseases, parasites, predators, whatever. And that's adult crappies we're talking about. Then you factor in how many get kept by fishermen. And that can vary quite a bit depending on the lake and, you know, how much access there is, how far it is from big cities, things like that. But that can range between 10 to 40%. So in a lot of these lakes, about 50% of the crappies die every year. 50%. Oh, wow. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And so, you know, harvest is a big component of that. When you got 50% dying every year, you think about how hard it is for a crappie to make it one year, then the next year, then the next year, then the next year without dying. And that's a big reason why not a lot of them get up to that super big size.
And I suppose the smaller the lake, I mean, earlier we talked about some of these little puddles out in the forest out there. If you find one that's got big crappies, it only takes one or two anglers to pretty much devastate that if they keep a lot of fish.
Yeah, that's right. You know, smaller lake, small population, you might show up and you're catching big fish and everything's great, but it doesn't take a whole long, you know, a whole lot of time and a lot of harvest for that population size to really change quite a bit. And, you know, it's definitely a factor. Same thing with bluegill.
Well, bluegills, there's a whole other topic on that, though, too. From my reading and talking to some of my guide friends in Minnesota and reading some stuff over there, is that the big ones are the males. And the big males, actually, the big bulls, and you get up in that 9-10-inch range, they actually dictate the size structure of the lake just by a hierarchy thing, right?
Yep, that's exactly right. And that's maybe an eye-opener for some people, but in bluegills, it is the males that get bigger than the females. And they have this really interesting little social structure. And when you look at lakes that have almost no harvest of bluegill, the density of bluegill is actually really low, but the size is really big. Most of the males are going to be 9 or 10 inches. And they're actually controlling the number of new bluegill that come into the lake, too, because there's so much less nesting that goes on. It's really fascinating. And we've started to look at this on some basically lakes that have no fishing whatsoever. And what does the bluegill population look like there compared to one of our lakes where, you know, it's a real popular fishing lake and there's a lot of harvest going on? Looks totally different.
Well, you know, talking to, you know, friends of mine over in Minnesota, there's lakes over there that produce 10-inch bluegills where the fishing pressure took out that population, clipped the top off all the big 10-inch males that they've tried to bring back, and they just can't get them to come back. So once that's gone, it may not be recoverable from what I understand.
Yeah, that could be the case, or it could just take a very long time, and you'd have to have, you know, really, really restrictive regulations to get yourself there. And a lot of times anglers just aren't willing to do that. You know, we want to have regulations that allow for a fair amount of harvest, and generally speaking, a lot of people are happy with that, but, you know, it's not the conditions where you're going to be growing those 10-inch plus bluegills.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a good meal of panfish to eat, but we've talked about this many times, and you endorse this, is that don't go out and cherry pick the top, the biggest fish, and throw back all the smaller ones. And I've had other guides and everything else out there that want to go out. They want 10-inch or bigger crappies, for instance. And, it, you know, that actually may be the wrong thing to look at. I mean, if you're catching a lot of 8s and 9s, you should be keeping the 8s and 9s more than the big fish. And same thing with bluegills. Keep some of the smaller ones.
Yep. Yeah, that's certainly an approach that lines up with the biology. And if your goal is to see bigger panfish going forward, going into the future, you want to be letting the bigger ones go that you're catching and keeping more of the abundant medium-sized ones. And that's definitely true with bluegill and crappie as well.
A little more work cleaning them and not quite as much meat on them. But you know what? If you're looking at down the line and for you and the kids down there and your grandkids, that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it would work. If you could get everybody on board with doing it, it would work. And it's just going to kind of take a change in the angler mindset if we're going to see it happening on a larger scale. I'm not going to stand here and, you know, judge anybody. If they want to harvest fish, they harvest fish. It all just depends on what your objective is. If you want to see the fish starting to get bigger in a lake, there's some strategies out there to improve that. Some of the things we're doing on our end where we're trying different regulations that, you know, kind of put an official restriction on harvest, but there's things anglers can do on a volunteer basis too. If they want to see something change in one of their favorite lakes, harvest more medium-sized fish, harvest less fish overall. Those are pretty well-proven strategies to improve size over time.
Well, Max, it's been interesting talking to you about this panfish thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Panfish are fascinating, and a lot of people care about them, so it's a great topic.
Probably more people fish for them than anything else, I think.
Oh, yeah, the statistics are amazing. There's like 60 million panfish caught in Wisconsin every year. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing that fisheries could keep going. Anyway, I want to thank you for coming on here.
You bet. Thanks for having me, John.
Well, as usual, Max has always got some good stuff to talk about. We do need to take a break right now again and hear from more of our fine sponsors. And we come back, we'll have another interview and more on your outdoors.
Check out OC Outfitters for all your fishing, hunting, and camping needs this year. They're ready to get you out on the lake with everything from rods and reels to licenses and live bait. Come see their Columbia clothing for men, women, and children. They have a full line of shirts, rain gear, shorts, and jackets, and they have new rifles, shotguns, and handguns to choose from. New this season, a propane filling station. That's OC Outfitters, 4 miles east of Hayward on Highway B, open 7 days a week. Phone 715-634-1044.
Now's the time of year when many people are placing out mouse bait. Dr. Todd Ostrander and the staff at the Hayward Animal Hospital remind you that some of the newer mouse baits are far more deadly to your pet than in the past. Be sure to always read and follow the label directions. In the unfortunate event that your pet does get into mouse bait, promptly seek veterinary care. Hayward Animal Hospital is located on Highway B. For an appointment, call them today at 715-634-8971.
Welcome back to the last segment of this week's Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. Myself, John Myrie, and co-host Art Malin. And Art, I know you got something there you wanted to talk about real quick.
Well, if you have a little time, you might want to contact the governor, and because House, the Assembly Bill 455, which is a bill that's going to change young people that are starting to hunt. The way it is in our state right now, you got to be 10 years old minimum, and that's as young as you can be to hunt. In most states in this nation, they have a situation where their family decides whether their young person is able to hunt, whether it's a male or female. And a lot of these states have a lot of kids that are hunting that are not 10 years old. So this bill will change everything. It's been passed by the Senate. It's been passed by the House and the state. And if you want to have a little input, call the governor. His number is 608-266-1212, or go to the email and go to https://walker.wisconsin.governor.contact.
Well, you know, we're talking about ice fishing here, too, and one thing I want to remind people is that if you want to get out and see what's new in ice tackle, you can stop down here at Hayward Bait and Bottle, but also there's some big ice fishing shows going on coming up here. The big one, the big show at St. Paul, at the St. Paul River Center, that'll be December 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And then there'll be another one in Duluth, a little bit closer, at the Deck Center, and that will be December 8th, 9th, and 10th. And those are both pretty good shows to go to see some of the new winter toys and some of the stuff going on. Talking about the ice fishing, one of those shows I had a chance, I met with this guy over in Minnesota, Ron Aniloff. He's a pro guide and an outdoor writer, and have a chance to talk to him about early ice walleye and early ice panfish. So let's hear what he had to say in that short interview. Talking to Ron Aniloff, and you know, when you guys are getting out there ice fishing, I know you like to fish panfish as well as about everything, right?
I do, but I seem to start off the season every year chasing walleye. I like to get it while the getting's good.
You know, why is the early part of the season the best time, you think, for walleye?
Well, they're most active. The lakes are still loaded with oxygen. They're feeding heavy. They're just a little easier mark than the midwinter, kind of mid to late winter, when they can get a little sluggish. If you get a lot of ice and a lot of snow, you know, it shuts the sunlight down, and you don't get the oxygen production, and the fish just slow down.
You know, what's the best tip that you can give people to find those walleyes early?
I'd always look for a nice break close to a big feeding shelf. You know, the break by itself doesn't mean much. They're looking for food. And typically that's going to be on a deep weed line or on a rocky bar or hump. And I look for a hard bottom break close to a shelf that can hold some food.
That's usually, and actually areas where you find a little bit better ice early too.
That's true. Yep, you can find them back in the bays. You know, if you're on a big lake, you can find them in the shallower bays. And a lot of that action's right at dark or just after dark. So be prepared to stay late.
What's your best presentation out there? I know Wisconsin seems to be tip-ups, but...
I always, all winter long, have a jigging spoon in one hand. I might have a bobber out, I might have a tip-up out, but I always have a jigging spoon in my hand. I feel very comfortable with that spoon. I know it attracts fish. I know I can catch fish with it if you work it right. So I like a little buckshot rattle spoon, a little macho minnow. I go a little smaller, especially when I'm in shallower water. It might be a 16th ounce spoon tip with a minnow head, or maybe like a whole minnow if it's a smaller minnow. I'm going up to Lake of the Woods, and they've got these emerald shiners up there, and they're perfect size for fishing the whole minnow.
Guys, I want to start looking for winter panfish. Any good tips for them on finding and catching more fish?
Well, there's going to be fish on the weed lines if you're looking for bluegills. If you're looking for crappies, I'd probably move off the breaks off of those weedy flats. I like to use teeny tiny little jig heads with Euro larvae, maybe a wax worm. I'm not a big waxworm fan, though I like that little Eurolarva. And if you hook them right, they'll wiggle and writhe on that hook. If you go through the end with the two little dots on it, then a nice little tiny tungsten jig head maybe. Crappies, I'm going to go a little bit bigger, although they'll hit that small stuff. I might go bigger, and I might have to have some minnows along. They will eat bugs, but sometimes they prefer the minnows.
I know your electronics is one of your more important things with panfish, too.
Absolutely, and I got to be seeing fish on those electronics. If I'm not, they are not there. Plain and simple. Although I shouldn't say that. It could be really tight to the bottom, so if you're not seeing fish, make sure you fish real close to the bottom. But if you're on a lot of bluegills, they tend to suspend up off the bottom. Crappies for sure suspend up off the bottom, and you can see them on a depth finder when you're really on them good.
What type of depth finder are you running, flasher or the depth finder screen what?
I went with a 597 Hummingbird last year.
That's exactly what I run.
I love the thing. I've been a flasher guy all my life, but I went with that liquid crystal display, and I run it in the flasher mode when I'm fishing. Otherwise, it's a GPS, and it's big enough to show all the detail on an electronic map. I love that unit.
You know, and half the time I run in the graph mode because it actually shows you a lot of information that way too.
Sure, you can do it. It's all there, and I think it's easier to see in the sunlight than any other depth finder.
Interesting stuff, and I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to our listeners, Ron.
Always a pleasure.
Well, you know, he's an interesting guy. I know that everybody seems to get out there after first ice for walleyes, but, you know, the panfish can be awful good out there too, Art.
Yeah, that's true. Going back to walleyes, though, you know, the strange thing that happens every year is people get out on the Chippewa Floyds, and they get out early, I mean, when you can barely walk on ice, and they catch a lot of big fish.
Well, you know, and so I mean, a lot of it's tip-up fishing, and, you know, we're starting to see more and more guys now that are starting to use jigging rods, and that's basically a standby over in Minnesota more than the tip-up. Guys catch most of their walleyes on the jigging rod.
Yeah, and they, you know, they have lures right now that you can jig with, and boy, I'll tell you, they do more than just come up and down, John. They go in a circle, and it's really neat.
Jigging lures. I mean, jigging spoons, jigging lures. But, you know, if you're going to start trying to jig fish, one thing you want to do is remember line visibility is a pretty good, a big factor out there. I know I like to use a fluorocarbon leaders. It's a little stiffer. It don't foul so much on the jigging spoons. It rattle around more. And, you know, fluorocarbon line is going to catch you more fish. And even on tip-ups, I'll use the fluorocarbon leaders now. You know, it's just another way of catching, being more effective out there, because these fish in the wintertime and that water's clear, and especially on the Clearwater lakes, line visibility is a big deal.
That's really important, because if there's too much movement that they see, they're gone.
Yeah, you know, even they see that line. Well, you know, the muzzleloader season will be coming up here, and muzzleloader things, a couple of tips on that is, you know, the new muzzleloaders now, when they went to that 209 shot shell primer, that made a whole difference in the way these guns shoot. I mean, there's no more of this fizzle bang and no more of this and fail to go off if you load them properly, because every time it's like shooting your favorite deer rifle. I mean, and they're just as accurate.
Probably so, and if you haven't tried it, you ought to try it, because it really is fun, John. It's, yeah. I mean, you can look out there and you can see animals, and you have this muzzleloader. And today, that muzzleloader is just as accurate as your rifle.
200-yard guns. I mean, now guys that'll even shoot farther than that. But pay attention to how you load. Work up a load, whether it's using the pellets or the loose powder. I prefer the loose powder. I like Hodgdon 777 and loose powder. And work up a particular load with a particular bullet, sight your gun in with it, and stick with that, because then you get consistency, and make sure you clean the gun. And speaking of cleaning the guns, most of the new guns now are a whole lot easier to clean. That was a big bugaboo about those things years ago.
I mean, you shoot one shell or two shells, it didn't make any difference. Your gun was dirty. I mean, really dirty, and you had to clean it.
Yeah, and cleaning it was a chore, because now you can just remove the breech plug and look straight down the barrel.
That's right. Now, if you want to get into it, you might stop down here at the shop and talk to some of the people who have that do it, and they'll tell you how to do it, and they'll show you the kind of weapons that'll work really good.
You bet. Well, Art, you know, we're out of time for this week. I want to remind folks that if you miss a show, we do a new show every week, and we put that show up on our website at wnoradio.net. It's a podcast site, and it'll link you right through to that. You can listen to it anytime, even on your phone if you want to. So that's available. If you miss a show, remember that's there.
And if you're going to go out hunting, take that youngster with you. they might really be interested once they do it.
And we're out of time for this week, and we'll see you again next week with another interesting show.
Listen with me, I'm gonna take you there to our Wisconsin outdoors, our Wisconsin outdoors.
This program has been produced and hosted entirely by Wisconsin Northland Outdoor Communications. Any and all views expressed are not necessarily those of the station.